world. Ironically, I have been at PI for 3 years, and this is the first time I am given a seminar here. I did other presentations, but not seminars. So today I'll talk about so-called bright light chirostasis in quantum gravity. And this is based on two works. The first one is collaboration with Lee Smolin, and the second one on my own. Some of you might have already listened to my talk in the Loops 07 last summer. And this is more or less similar to that one, but with more details. And the results are more affirmative. So let's keep on. So here's the outline. After motivations and introduction, I will talk about the operations we can do on the four valence spin networks embedded in some three topology. And then, equipped with these, I will describe what we mean by braid interactions and propagations. And then, after all, I will present some discussions about the interaction propagation, and then conclusions in future works. How long do I have? 1 hour or what?
15 minutes.
Oh. Thanks. So here's the motivations. So we know loop quantum gravity have appeared in this world for more than 25 years or so. And however, it has been a very beautiful theory as a quantum theory of gravity. However, we haven't really been able to incorporate matter with this theory. So where is the matter in such a theory? Or loop quantum gravity can only be a pure theory of gravity without matter. Or there is matter, but we just haven't been really find out yet. So there are two main philosophies of unifying gravity with matter. So the first one is like what we usually do in quantum field theory. We just couple matter fields with quantum gravity. And the other philosophy is we consider matter as emergent objects in quantum gravity. And this is the one we're going to take in this work. So how do we do this? There have been some ideas related to this philosophy in the past years, but none of them has been completely successful yet. And recently, Sundance, he presented a ribbonized prion model, which means all the standard model particles, those fundamental particles, they are not truly point-like particles. Rather, they are formed by braids. In particular, the elements in B3 groups, which means braids formed by three strands. And this just lies on loop quantum gravity with matter. As a result, Sundance, Fortini, and Lee, they worked out in a simple loop quantum gravity model. For example, like in particular, the three valence spin networks embedded in three topology, they found out local particle-like excitations which are conserved. And they might correspond to Sundance's prions, ribbonized prions. However, this model suffers from some limitations for now. They might be solved later, but for now, they still suffer some limitations. The first limitation is that these local excitations, they are exactly conserved, which means they cannot interact with each other. So then we might not be able to interpret them as particles, because particles, they interact with each other. And another issue is that this model has infinite number of these local particle-like excitations. And but we know that the standard model has only limited number of, as far as we know, number of fundamental particles. So we might think something else. And we know that we live in three space. And the four valence spin networks, they have two correspondence to three space. So we may try to see what's going on with the embedded four valence spin networks. Okay, so here is a forward spin network embedded in some 3 topology. So the task is how to denotate this graph such that it is convenient for us to carry on the calculations. And this graph, they might be framed. The framing comes from, originally comes from when the theory is, when we are talking about a root quantum gravity with a positive cosmological constant. So we choose to use so-called sphere and tube diagrams to represent a embedded framed spin network. So here's the details. So we represent each node by a sphere, and each edge of the embedded spin network by a tube. So this is what we meant by the framed case. When the graph is framed, each edge becomes a tube, and the node becomes a sphere. So when there is no framing, then each of these tubes, they just reduce back to simple lines.
What about during the show the framing?
But are you going at some point to explain the physics of that? Why do you want to do such a thing? What type of reason or type of computation you do
with it? What do you mean? Sorry.
Well, here you mean
Yeah, we use this kind.
At some point, you're going to describe the physics, why you do that, and what's the model? Yeah.
Well, the model is just if we're talking about framed graph, we're talking about a loop form gravity model with a positive cosmological constant. So I won't go into any specific model.
I'm thinking about framing of links, you know, so you have an orientation there, you can give an orientation.
Yeah, good question. So we are choosing the sphere to be rigid such that there is no degeneracy of these edges. So no any two edges, three edges live on the same plane, no any two edges, they are linear to each other.
Sure, but what about the tube? I'm thinking about the tube as a framing of the original. How do you give orientation? I think the answer is going to be something to do with the three progressive stripes that you have in the diagrams that come the way.
Yeah, probably you will see that later. I'm not sure.
There's a way of representing like these diagrams in the top right corner differently so you can see unambiguously which way, if they're like balls drawn up to each other and how much twist there is.
I had a question regarding the trivalent case. One of the reasons what you're saying was there were an infinite number of particles. It comes back to what Laura was asking, like, are these particles physical or do
I guess you'd better ask this question to Sandon,
because unless you know that criticism doesn't apply.
Well, the short answer is, there's two ways to answer this question. One is we're not sure yet how many degeneracies there are in different brain structures. So, naively, you can cross three strands over each other as many times as you'd like and produce an infinite number of different braids. But if one of the ends of that braid is free and can be deformed back through the remaining braid, there's a set of degeneracies where, for instance, you know, I have like six alternating crosses, if we want to have no cross at all. So there has to be some. We're in the process of trying to figure out how much degeneracy there is there.
All right, so
it's not necessarily true that there are, but let's call it the second response is.
I think my question is basically how, what is the procedure to know like these degrees of freedom correspond to physical particles in the STEM model?
Right, that's really a pattern matching problem where once we've figured out what the degeneracies are and how many So things that are already established are things like the twist leading edge individual strands in one to one correspondence to one charge. Mm-hmm. So there's an ongoing effort to try to identify other problems.
Can you sorry. Yeah. Can we leave this for?
Okay,
yeah. So, but this notation is still not convenient enough for us to carry out the calculations. So, keeping the framing in mind, we can just reduce the tubes back to lines, but just keeping the framing in our minds. And the spheres, we can draw their projections on the on 2D surface by just a circle. But because this is indeed 3D stuff, so the edges to the front, we use solid lines to represent them, and those edges to the back, we use dashed lines to represent them. And this is a view from the back of this whole picture. And because these are tubes in the framed case, so we can have twists of these tubes. For example, a pi twist with respect to this point on this tube. And we can also do rotations of these nodes with respect to some edges, some edge of the nodes. And I'll talk about what I mean by, and what's the point of the rotations later. So with these notations, we are particularly interested in a subdiagram, a type of subdiagram of the embedded forward and spin network, and they are the so-called three-strand braids, which are formed by the three common edges of two nodes adjacent to each other. And what's in between these two blue dashed lines, or what actually formed by these three strands, satisfy the usual definition of a three-strand braid in the braid theory. So this is just a projection of an embedded braid. And so we call it a braid diagram, because there are many braid diagrams that represent the diffeomorphic embeddings of the same graph in the three topology. So we call it a braid diagram as opposed to the true braid embedded in the three topology. And we can have twists on the strands of this braid. But this twist can be unambiguously represented by just an integral number, because each of the strands is always between two nodes. Their ends are fixed on these nodes. So both of these two twists, they are actually the same twist represented by a positive integer number. We call it a right-handed twist. And the left-handed ones are represented by negative integers. We can also do a similar assignments to the crossings of these braids. To the crossings of the braids, and also plus one for the right-handed and minus one for the left-handed ones, and zero for no crossing. So as I just said, there are many braid diagrams that represent the diffeomorphic embeddings of the same graph. So we need to find out what are the equivalent diagrams. Therefore, we need to define or figure out some moves that we can operate them on this graph, such that we can find out the equivalent ones. And the first type of equivalent moves are the rotations. So because here in the braid diagram, the node in a specific braid diagram is called a state of the node, and there are many different states of the nodes. And to relate these different states of a node, we can do rotations. And we found that all these rotations can be generated by the pi over 3 rotations. So for example, here's a node, and we use these two edges to the front. And we can then choose the z edge of this node as the rotation axis. We can do a rotation and end up with such a configuration And we can see that a crossing in this projection is generated, and a twist, the same amount of twists are generated on these three edges, which are not the rotation axis. And the twist on the rotation axis is of the same value, but in, with the different sign, the opposite sign. We can do a similar thing, similar rotation in the other direction, and come up with a crossing below. And all the rest are similar, but just with opposite signs. So this is a rotation when the state of the node is like this, when these two edges are to the front. And we can also do similar rotations. And then we can, with pi over 3 rotations, we can do 2 pi over 3 rotations and pi rotations. And all those rotations are generated by this pi over 3 rotations. So other than rotations, we still have translations. So the most obvious translations are just the regular right Meissner moves defined in free topology. And those moves do not involve any nodes of the diagram. So we can also define translation moves that involves involve the nodes of the diagram. So here, this is the most the simplest case where we can just translate this node or shift this node to another place along this edge. And these red dots, they just refer to the places where these edges are attached to. And a bit more complicated case is where is when there is a crossing when we are doing the translation. So when we can in such a case, because this node together with all its edges are above this crossing, so we can translate this node along its edge A to the other side of the crossing without any causing any problem. And this doesn't change any of the diffeomorphism of this embedding. So we end up with another looking of the same diagram of the same embedding. So and the number of crossings never changed. And no entanglement cost. And we found a conserved quantity associated with all these equivalence moves. Such a number for any sub-diagram in which we played with the equivalence moves, the sum over all the twists on the twist on all the edges minus twice of the sum over the crossing numbers of all the crossings is a conserved quantity under all the rotations and translations. So now we have these equivalence moves, then we can see what are the braids that are equivalent to each other. And in particular, we can classify the braids into two main categories, the so-called reducible and irreducible ones. So what do we mean by a reducible braid? So a braid is a left or right reducible if it is equivalent to a braid with less number of crossings. When we apply the equivalence moves on its left or right end node, here's an example. So this is a braid diagram of a two crossing braid. So we can do a rotation with respect to the z-axis of node 2. By this rotation, this crossing of the braid is gone. We just got this crossing left in this diagram. And this braid diagram is equivalent to this braid diagram of a single crossing here, but with twists on all its strands and the twist on this external edge. And equivalently, we can also do an opposite rotation back to its original setup. So these two braids are actually equivalent to each other. And we call this braid a right reducible one because we did a rotation on its right end node. And this braid is not left reducible because we cannot rotate this node to reduce this crossing. Whatever we do on this node with respect to its external edge can only increase the number of twists and number of crossings. So when So otherwise, the braid is called left or right irreducible. And if the braid is neither left or right nor right reducible, it is called a fully irreducible braid.
Why is that? I mean, so if you rotate the right node, you can undo the braid.
Yeah, you can undo this crossing.
Yeah, I see that. But why you cannot do that?
So you see that the key is here. The key is hidden in this, is implicated in this notation. So in this state of the node, these two edges are to the front. So if you fix this edge as the rotation axis, you rotate it. For example, you rotate it in this way.
Yeah.
Okay. Then this edge will come over this one, which will introduce one more crossing, and this crossing still stays. If you do it in the other way, this guy will come over this guy, so one more crossing below. So in that sense, you will always increase the number of crossings rather than reduce the original crossing. So the braid cannot be, this crossing cannot be undone from this side, but you can do it from this side. But this braid, after this crossing is undone, you cannot reduce this braid anymore, because you see now this too becomes the edges to the front. You can, if you rotate it again, then you will introduce more crossings. So this braid is called an irreducible braid. An irreducible braid. Is that clear?
It boils down to which way the dotted line and the solid line go through the circle in comparison with the adjacent crossing.
So I don't understand what you're talking about.
Well, I mean, if you've got, say, that crossing in the bottom right of the top diagram.
You mean this
that
one?
Yeah. If that crossing was the other way around, then it would be
true. True. Yeah.
So it's got a solid line going through
vertically or horizontally. So, why can't I rotate the left principle just against the parallel lines? The one below?
This one?
Can I rotate this one to the left? No, the one to the left. Number one.
This one? This part is the same as this part. So this part never gets changed. So what's been changed is this part, the right side.
But I can't change
the part. If you rotate it, you increase the number of crossings.
Anyway, you're telling that if you rotate number two, you can undo that crossing.
If you rotate number two in this braid diagram, you can undo this crossing.
But you cannot do number one.
You cannot undo it anymore, because after that you come to this case. Well, I can explain to you after this if you like. So now we have other so-called kinematics, because we know how to relate things that are equivalent to each other, and we classify the braids. And this classification is very key. It's very key to our further discussions. So now we're looking for dynamics, because if there's no dynamics, then we lose any physical meaning of this the whole work. Because if we want to interpret these braids as particles or whatsoever, then we need them to propagate and interact. Okay, so the next step is interactions. To do interactions, we need evolution moves. And these evolution moves are inherited from the passional moves defined on the dual graph of triangulations. And the first, but there's a condition, which I will mention later, which is not carried on the regular triangulations of three topology. So here's the first class of the moves, so-called 2-to-3 moves. On this move, we can bring two nodes adjacent to each other with one and only one common edge. Forget only one, with one common edge, to three nodes with three new more edges connecting them. And this, after this move, these three green edges, they form a contractible loop, because there's nothing entangled with this green loop and going through this loop. So you can just simply contract it. In this case, we can do a 3-2-2 move back to the original configuration. And the aforementioned condition we implemented for this Pachner move is that the region where we're going to do the Pachner move is supposed to be dual to an open 3 bar in R3. So this point should be regularly dual to a region inside R3. And then in that case, we can do a 2-3 move to generate 3 new more nodes and edges. And we can do a 3-2 move back to the original setup. So in our first setup, if in some case we have such a situation, but we have twists on these loops, or we have some other edge going through this loop, this green loop, then we cannot do a 3-2 move back to that configuration, because in those cases, this region will not be dual to a open R3 bar anymore. So this was the previous case. And as we already have the translations, we can see this is another equivalent result of a 2-3 move. We can simply put the node 3 on the other side of nodes 1 and 2. And these two are completely equivalent to each other. This is another case when the states of these two nodes are opposite to the to those in the previous setup. Nothing new. So here's another case of Pachner moves, the 1-2-4 moves. And this one is simpler because involved in the original configuration is a single tetrahedron. So as a Pachner 1-2-4 Pachner move, you can split this tetrahedron to 4 tetrahedron with respect to the barycenter. And we end up with, in our notation, graphical notation, we end up with this configuration. So 1 and 2, 4, and we have many more new edges represented in these red solid lines. And there are actually 4 contractible loops. And if that's the case, we can do a 4-to-1 Pachner move back to its original single node setup. And in the dual picture is the single tetrahedron. All right. So we now know the evolution moves we have. We can operate on these nodes and the whole graph. We can then try to see if there's any dynamics of those braid-like excitations. And indeed, there is. So here's an example of an interaction. And this example is the so-called active right interaction, by which I will explain soon. So this is our configuration. Suppose there are two braids, braid diagrams or braids, adjacent to each other. There is one common edge between these two end nodes of these two braids, X and Y. And as we have described the 2-3 moves, we can imagine to do a 2-3 Pachner move about these two nodes, X and Y. After that, we got this. So this is the result after the 2-3 move of these two nodes, X and Y. And we also have translations. So we can translate nodes 2, 3, and 4 together with these newly generated green edges all the way to the other side of this crossing. And here's what we obtain after that. So we translate the whole triangle to the other side. And we got something like this. Looks a bit funny. But now you see, it's very interesting. We got 4 nodes now. If we can, you may think, if we can do a 4-to-1 move to collapse all the 4 nodes together with this redundant edges to a single node, and if that's doable, we got only 1 node left, and these 3 edges still stay. So that means what? That means we've got a new braid formed by the original two braids. Now let's see if we can do that. And the answer is true. We can first do a rotation about node 3 and obtain this. You see, the rotation will create twists. You see, the original twist was minus 2 on this edge C, and after the rotation, we got plus 1 here. So minus 2 plus 1, we got minus 1 left. And the next step is to translate the node 3 along this edge C prime. So after this translation, we have a configuration which looks more like the configuration where we can do a 4-to-1 move. So we have new twists on this edge. The twists stay the same after translation because translation doesn't change the twist number. I haven't done the summation yet. I just left the twist numbers there to make things more obvious, more clearer. So we can do the next step. We can rotate node 3 once more with respect to the A edge. And what we got is this. This looks beautiful because this is, forget about these twists. We got exactly the same configuration as we had after 1-2-4 move of a node. We can come back to this and have a look. So this is the configuration after the 1-2-4 move from that single node to this. And here we have this one. And even more beautifully, we have this minus 2 twist number, which was on the original braid, canceled by this plus 2 twist generated by the rotations. So that means there's just no twist on this edge. And what we got is just this. And whatsoever to the left of this blue dashed line is the proper configuration for us to do a 4-to-1 collapse move. And if we do that, we got this. So this is the result after a bunch of complicated manipulations of translations, rotations, and evolution packular moves. We obtained a single braid from the original two braids adjacent to each other. This looks like an interaction of two particles. So this particle interacts with this particle. We get a new particle, supposedly a particle or something else or whatsoever. And more interestingly, the original twist on this particle or on this braid is preserved after this interaction. And the crossings are preserved. So this action simply looks like a connected sum of two braids, B and B prime. And now I'm going to explain why we call this an active right interaction. The reason is that the crossings of braid B don't play any role in this whole procedure. So they always stay the same. And all the packing moves and translations or rotations are all with respect to the braid B and edges or nodes of braid B. So that's why we call this braid a passive braid in this interaction, and this braid an active one. So this is called, so this braid B actively interact onto this braid B prime. That's why we call this process an active right interaction. And the conservation of twist. So now we have interactions. We have many more other examples, which I will not show in the slides. So we have interactions, but how could these two come up to each other? I mean, in an embedded graph with this one and this one were originally apart from each other. Then how can we make them come to each other such that the interaction can happen? Because this one will not just stay there for those two interact. There must be something we can do to make the interaction happen, and that's called the propagation. So here's an example of propagation. Sir?
The conservation of choice, is that something that like you have to work hard to make it so that you get that, like, the right combination of packing moves to get that, or is it a generic feature?
No, it has nothing to do with the packing moves you do. It's as long as the packing moves you can do, the twist will be conserved. Suppose you have -3 here. As our rule says, you can't even you can't even do a 4-1 collapse move because you have -3 and +2 here. You got a -1 left. And one of our rules says, you cannot do packing moves, 4-1 packing move in that case, because that's not dual to a ball in R3 anymore. But so a modification of our rule says, in some cases, we might allow that to happen. And we can see what we will get if we allow that to happen. One of the consequences is that if that's allowed, we will have much more braids that can interact. So
then it's like a theorem because of the rules that you pick.
That's a pretty natural rule we pick. So if that rule applies, then as long as you can do the packing move, in the case of interactions, the twist number will be preserved. And also the crossings.
When these braids interact, does one always get the same answer? Like, irrespective of how, like, my question is the final braid unique?
Yeah, it's unique. In this diagram, I mean, in this specific projection, it's unique. And you can do rotations to make to find their equivalent braid diagrams. But that's not, because we're interested in not a single braid diagram, but equivalence classes of the diagram. And we always pick up the most convenient representative of that equivalence class to study. So now here's the propagation. Here's the setup. So this is a whole diagram, and this edge goes to somewhere. And we have some sub-diagrams here, and edge E prime goes to somewhere else, and we don't care what they are. And in some cases, S and S prime can be connected via another edge too. But I'm not going to talk about it in this presentation. So this is a substructure, and this is our braid. And this is a two-crossing braid, and make sure that this is a right reducible braid. You can rotate this node to undo this crossing. So in this setup, I will show that this braid can come to the other side of this structure A by equivalence moves and the packing moves. I will not show those details as I did in the case of interaction. So I will just say it briefly. I have some details at the end of this presentation. If you're interested, I can show you. But after evolution moves and equivalence moves, hold on. So let me say a bit more. So we have X and Y here adjacent to each other with only one common edge. We can do a 2-3 move as we did in the case of interaction. And we obtain 3 new nodes and 3 new edges. But in the case of propagation, we will not translate the whole triangle, I mean, the 3 nodes and all the edges to the other side of these crossings. But we will only translate 2 of them together with their common edge to the other side of the crossings, and do whatever we can do such that the result is like this. So this braid B completely moves to the other side of the substructure. And this substructure doesn't change. So S and S prime stays. And these two twists, I left them on these two edges, S and prime, just for illustration, because these two, S and S prime, are connected to node U by one edge. So we can simply relax all these twists, and they make no difference. So we just left them there. And the braid B stays the same after this propagation. And also, the original twists of the braid B are preserved. That means we have propagations and interactions. A braid might come to one side of another braid, and they interact with it, and generate one new braid. And a braid can very well, if it is allowed, can be split into two braids, which looks like a kind of particle decay. And there are some theorems that constrain the braid interaction and propagation. So, and here's why their classifications are important. So if a braid is left or right irreducible, then the braid is not actively left or right interacting, which means if the braid cannot be reduced to a braid of less number of crossings on its left or right side, then it cannot actively interact onto its left or right. This sounds very, I don't know how to describe, but yeah. Okay.
You can propagate braids through some graph. Is there some way that you found that you can take a braid and turn it around so that one end swaps over the position of the other?
Well, I don't know if. Yeah, I that's a good question. I don't know if there's a simple procedure to do that. But as you can see from this propagation, then you can suppose that this edge goes to somewhere else in the graph, and you propagate this braid passing this structure, and pass another one, pass another one, pass another one, and come back to this place. But I don't know if you can just simply by some local moves and just flip them, flip the braids. I don't know. That doesn't look very probable. Yeah. So, and also.
What you mean here is that let's say you have a writing loose in the brain and you try to make it right interactive. Then there's no combination of those rotation
transition
moves such that the braid is preserved.
True.
So if you try to apply the dynamics theory, the braid will just be destroyed.
True. You cannot finish the procedure. But it can still interact.
If you want it to be preserved in some sense. Because you can still apply those moves but not being able to recover the
So the keep an emphasis on this word actively. Mm-hmm. So this braid, suppose the right one, right irreducible braid, can still interact with some other braids, but not actively. It stays passively. So somebody will come to it and interact with it. But that one must be the active braid, and this one just stay there doing nothing.
In principle, I could apply the
Yeah, but the translations won't work out. Because
what is not working out is that at the end the structure of the braid is preserved.
Yeah, at the end is you can still do translations, but you will cause some tangles between those edges, and at the end you cannot end up with a proper configuration such that you can do a 4-to-1 move to collapse the four nodes into a single node. So the procedure just will stop.
So what you're saying is that if I can take, say two braids and I have them interact and I end up with something at the end, what I'm doing is perhaps transforming one braid into another. So I'm not preserving the original structure, I'm actually changing that.
Yeah, you are changing two braids into some weird configurations, that subdiagrams, and you don't know what they are.
Yeah, but there's nothing to stop you from doing that.
In some cases, our rules stop you from doing that. In some cases, our rules don't stop you from doing that, but you can still do that if you like.
But as I keep getting more complex
structures.
And there's nothing fundamental in here that says this can't happen. Two braids
happen to come into contact with each other, less it moves, you get something more complex.
Yeah, in some cases you can.
So, very nice question. So what is the viewpoint here? Like, if such a thing happens, is one saying, like, in a naive way, perhaps that we have the interaction between two particles and one, these particles either don't interact or they create unstable particles, or how do you view this when you get this complex structure?
I don't know. A naive thinking is that those two are not particles. They're something else.
The two breaks you started.
Yeah. I don't know. And if the braid is neither left or nor right reducible, which means it is an irreducible braid, then the braid is never actively interacting. And this is a obvious consequence of the first theorem. And for propagation, we have similar theorem. So if a left or right irreducible braid is not left or right propagating. So if a braid cannot be reduced from its right side, then it cannot move to its right side. An irreducible braid is never propagating. And they just always stay there until the whole graph to be changed by evolution moves or rotation equivalence moves operated on the rest of the graph. So you might by that you might move the braid to somewhere else, but this is not what we meant by a propagation. So another interesting theorem is that if a braid is left or right interacting actively, then the braid is also left or right propagating. So if a braid can interact actively, then it can propagate, no problem. And so these theorems look a bit like some chirality given some chiral properties to these braid-like excitations. If a braid is right reducible and it can move to the right, or left reducible to move to the left. That's why we call it.
Sorry. Is it fair to say that what you're really doing is just defining an equivalence relation? So I've got two braids that have it. One is to the first is to the left of the second, and then I have two braids where you've reversed that, but those two configurations are equal. So you're calling it propagation.
Yeah, not two braids adjacent to each other and swap their positions, but a braid can propagate in the whole diagram. So not two braids swap their positions. So I guess it's about the time. So here's the conclusion. So we studied the three-strand braid excitations on these embedded forward and framed parentheses. Spin networks, and we classify the braids into reducible and the irreducible braids, and some sub-classifications are listed out. And there are examples of braids that can propagate and also can actively interact. And the propagations and the actions show some chirality of these braids. And the last is the active interaction implies propagation. So with all these, we might try to see what kind of future works we can do. So first is, if these are particles or some even more fundamental matter content, then can we classify them into fermions and bosons, and how do we do that? They should, if they satisfy the spin statistics, and that's one of the things we can try to look at. And the second one, which is also very important, we can see if this really recovers the standard model as the first step is, of course, we can see if these braids corresponds to the prion model proposed by Sundance. If that's true, then we can further look at if these are standard model particles. Or there's another possibility that these braids are not exactly the same as the prions proposed by Sundance, but they still directly recover the standard model. But the second main possibility is these braids are simply have no direct relation to the fundamental particles of standard model, but they are something else. They're probably the most fundamental matter content of our universe. And the third one is, what about the unembedded case? Here I'd like to mention that Isabu has worked on the unembedded case for a long while, and he worked out the 2D case in detail and found some interesting results, like conserved quantities, and some quantities might be considered as particles. And the 3D case is much more complicated, and we'll try to see if we can do something in the 3D case. So, and here's the end, acknowledgement. Thanks, Smalin. Questions? Well, there are two versions of what Neil Armstrong said at that moment. And Lee knows the bad version, and he didn't want to tell me. Probably that's too nasty. I don't know. So, yeah, the good version everybody knows, or. Oh, yeah. I don't know.
Okay, so since we have plenty of time for questions, if you have some.
So you construct braids that could drop knowledge or interact either on the left or right with the braids that you both?
Yeah. Actually, we found some braids that can do these, and the reason why we're interested in three-strand braids are, I think there are two or three reasons. The first reason is that in the original prion model, Sundance proposed that the prions are formed by three-strand braids. And more importantly, in the four-valent case, you shouldn't look at the two-strand braids, because you can always redo those braids by rotations, and so they're trivial. And you shouldn't look at the four-strand braids as well, because formed by two nodes, because that's a completely closed subdiagram which is detached from the rest of the graph, so they are not interested either. So we only look at the simplest interesting case is the three-strand braids formed by two nodes. And there are, of course, more complicated structures, like more multiple strand braids formed by multiple the edges of multiple nodes. And I don't know what they mean, and they are not interesting to us. And they might not even be conserved.
What do you mean by braids in
an
unembedded case?
In an unembedded case, there's no braids. All the crossings reduced to permutations.
You said that.
Yeah. Here, what I meant is we just try to look at the unembedded case of the graph to see if we have a similar topological structures that are conserved in some sense and can also propagate and interact. And I didn't say braids here, but you can also have these kind of structures, but in the unembedded case, I should make things clearer. In the unembedded case, we have only abstract graphs, so. So we can still have this kind of structure. It looks like a braid in the embedded case. But in the unembedded case, the crossing, there is no meaning of talking about over or under. The crossings simply becomes two crossings between these two strands, and these will reduce to the permutation of these strands. And what we left in the unembedded case is just the permutation information, and not the crossing. So I didn't say we will find we will.
So what are the basics? What are the analogs of phrase?
Well, and well, in the unembedded 3D case, all the crossings
What is 3D? Is this the analog of the virtual knots?
Yeah. Well, what we mean by 3D is that these graphs we're talking about are the dual graph of triangulations of three topology. So that's what we meant by 3D. So in that case, we're talking about four-valent graphs, and which are dual to the triangulations. So that's what we meant. And there is no braids anymore. And in particular, all these crossing, all the crossings between these strands, can be found to be equivalent to permutations within the lines of the strands. So in the unembedded case, we only have these kind of structure, three strands parallel to each other, without crossing with each other, but they have permutations between these lines of representing the strands. So there is no braid anymore.
Your basic structure, you have some analog of the idea of a braid?
There's no braid.
It's just any, no, I mean, what would be your analog? What are your elementary objects that you would deal with?
Elementary objects are the graphs dual to triangulations. That's what we, that's the.
So you have the permutation, if you have a braid, if it's embedded, you have how it's embedded.
Right.
But otherwise, if it's not embedded, it's only the permutation which counts. And the permutation will induce some, the permutations are, some of them are conservative.
So then, I mean, why would you have a three-dimensional, why would you demand it to be dual to a tri-dimensional of a three manifold and then have it not be embedded?
So, well, if it's dual, then it doesn't need to be embedded. If it's dual, it's no. Dual to a simplicial complex.
But I mean, why? What's the motivation for it? Well, if you're thinking of it as essentially three-dimensional thing, then it seems like it would be.
No.
That number to be embedded.
Of course not. Then it's extra structure. So, because what it's embedded in has no correlation to it, with the dual picture, with the topology of the dual picture is. They're totally independent things. So if you have it embedded, then that's extra structure and extra degrees of freedom you have on top.
But why would you demand it to be three-dimensional then?
Because
so if it's not to be embedded.
You don't need to divide. I mean, you can do it two-dimensional. But the thing is, if you, for example, if you have this four-valent thing like that, then each leg is dual to. It means that if you see it in terms of simplices, then this is a four simplex. It's three simplex.
Well, look, you can investigate any case you like. I mean, two trivalent, four-valent, or even n-valent cases, and you can even. You study the cases where the nodes have different valence, but you need a motivation. Motivation is by 3D, because we live in 3D, so we want to look at 3D. In 2D, because you can try to see if there's any correspondence to some 2 plus 1 models or whatever. But I don't, so we work on 3D. Oh yeah, that's a good question, and yeah, that's what we have been thinking for a while. And, there is no precise answer for that for the moment.
So you don't have any idea to believe that you could actually increase the huge hierarchy of interactions?
Well, we cannot see an obvious answer to your question at the moment, but yeah, we are trying. So.
Okay, so then there are no questions. Let's thank you again.
Thank you.